powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Here we go now.
Lots of questions in free agency so far, and it's only just begun. Pro Football Focus's Sam Monson joins us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Hey, Sam, how's it going?
Going good. How about you?
We are great. Obviously, the big signing for Seattle was Leonard Williams, bringing him back. They brought back Noah Fant. Otherwise, the outside additions have been kind of quiet so far. I'll start with Leonard Williams. What did you make of Seattle hanging on to him?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the kind of move that they had to make, given that they traded for him and brought him over. Teams hate doing that unless they're going to sign that guy long term and keep him around. And I think in his particular case, it makes sense. You know, he's a good defensive lineman for them. Maybe never has quite become the superstar that his draft status or that he was maybe expected to be coming into the NFL, but he's going to be a consistent sort of 50 pressure a season type of guy who's also effective against the run, versatile, can move all along that defensive front. So I think that was a signing they had to make and one that they've successfully brought back.
So now Drew Lock goes over to the New York Football Giants, and you just have Geno here as your quarterback. When you look at the situation, do you feel like the Hawks will and should address that position in the draft, or do you look at Justin Fields and say, all right, teams are saying, our sources are saying, he's worth a third round pick right now. You go ahead and make a bid for him that way.
Yeah, Fields is an interesting case now because you're right. The market is starting to look like he's now a backup. You know, we're running out of starting opportunities for Justin Fields. There aren't even too many spots where it would be a competition. He's starting to look like strictly a backup for a lot of teams. And that's what sort of pushes the price tag in terms of trade down to a third or a fourth round pick. Trey Lance, you know, went a year ago for a fourth round pick. So that's the kind of market I think that he's starting to look like if he is a backup. But if he's a backup, he's probably only one for a year. It's a short term rental because of the contract that he's on. You get one more year of pretty cheap deal for Justin Fields backup money. If you pick up his fifth year option, it jumps to $25 million next season. That's sort of between top-end backup and low-end starter money. And then obviously after that, if you think he's the guy, you're paying him a big money contract going forward. So any team looking to bring in Justin Fields is probably only looking at it for a short-term, one-year type of deal, or you think he can be a starter down the line. And I don't really think the Seahawks are in that category or probably don't want to open that door given where they are with Geno. I think as long as you have Geno Smith, you're probably always keeping an eye on the draft and on future quarterbacks, and maybe you're not looking to actively replace him, but you're always kicking the tires on a young prospect and seeing if you can find a guy that can develop behind him and maybe take over in a couple of years.
Free agency has been kind of weird for Seattle. In general, they tend to be pretty quiet. I think Dre Jones is like the biggest free agent contract that they'd given someone before last offseason. They don't typically make a huge splash. They've done so with trades, but not with free agency. This year, they cleared up all this cap space, and we thought, well, maybe they'll try to do something. Maybe it'll be Patrick, you know, Queen, maybe someone else. And Sam, I think what they've run into is maybe their biggest positions of need aren't necessarily the strengths of this class. If that's the kind of team you are that year, and that's not just Seattle, there are some teams around the league that just, you know, the best guys available aren't necessarily guys they need. What should your approach be?
I think generally speaking, doing what the Seahawks have done in terms of shopping in the kind of lower echelons of free agency and not going after the crazy price guys at the top is the best way of doing business in free agency. I think you tend to get the best value contracts going about it in that way. But you're right. Sometimes your needs just don't align with where the free agent class is and where the money is going. So I think Seattle may have run into that to a degree, that the areas that they would want to spend if they were spending, there's just not a great group of free agents this year, or the ones that were there got picked off either right at the start of free agency or went back. A lot of these players that we thought were going to hit free agency very late in the process re-signed with the teams that they were potentially going to leave. So I think that took away some potential players that a lot of teams had their eyes on going into free agency.
I'm always trying to figure out, free agency happens so fast, right? And I look at teams, and some teams make me just nod in approval like I do my son when he does what he's supposed to do, like, good job. And I'm looking at the Washington Commanders and saying, okay, I see you. You got Frankie Louvu, Austin Eckler, Brandon McManus. You got Dante Fowler and Marcus Mariota as a backup or potentially the starter. What team do you look at and give that nod of approval and say, I like what you're doing?
Yeah, I think there's a few. I like what the Eagles did, staying in that same division. I think Philadelphia made a lot of smart moves. I love the Bryce Huff signing. They're the one team that doesn't need to know if Bryce Huff can keep doing what he's doing with a bigger workload. They don't need to give him a bigger workload. They love the kind of rotation that they have on the defensive line. They can keep him playing 450, 500 snaps. They don't need to see if he can do it over 800. So I think that's a perfect fit for him. And for them, they bring back Chauncey Gardner-Johnson. They obviously extend Landon Dickerson. And then Saquon Barkley, it's big money, but that's a great offensive system, an offensive line to put in front of him. The Giants line has been one of the worst in the league for the last couple of years. The Eagles have had the best offensive line for the last 2 years straight. And even if they've got to replace Jason Kelce, there's going to be a little bit of turnover there this time. I think it'll still be catapulting Saquon into a much, much better situation. So I definitely like what the Eagles have done so far.
Obviously not a Seahawks question, but I really loved the signing of Derrick Henry to Baltimore, and I also really liked your point about it. Someone said, why is everyone ignoring the fact that he's a 30-year-old running back with significant tread on the tires? And you said, because he's kind of made a career out of defying conventional rules for running backs.
Yeah, we have to appreciate at this point, Derrick Henry is not normal. Like, Derrick Henry is not the standard running back. He had like 1,200 carries in college, in high school before he even got to college. Then he was a workhorse for Alabama. Then he's been a workhorse in the NFL. And 2-3 years ago was the first time he ever had a significant injury, missed half the season and came back and hasn't dropped off. So, you know, Derrick Henry's 30 years old. He's already proven multiple times that he is an exception to all of the conventional wisdom and the rules we think we know about running backs. So I don't think you can apply the same logic to him that you do for most running backs. Adrian Peterson was the last guy that was true for. You know, the rules just didn't apply to Adrian Peterson. He came back off a knee injury, won MVP. He was a complete abnormality, an absolute freak. And I think Derrick Henry is the same. When Adrian Peterson hit 30 years old, he led the league in carries, rushing yards, and touchdowns. Derrick Henry is now going to a dramatically better offensive line than was in front of him in Tennessee, even though it's got some turnover right now. The Ravens are doing some business. He's also got Lamar Jackson as part of that run game. That completely shifts the entire dynamic. And the team overall is in much better shapes, and they're not paying him much. So I love that fit. I think from a neutral's point of view, it's the kind of scientific experiment that everybody wants to see. What happens when you put Derrick Henry in a backfield with Lamar Jackson as the quarterback? So I think it's going to be one of the most fun things for everybody to watch this season.
It's going to be fun to watch Russell Wilson in Pittsburgh. I've listened to some experts, and some say, okay, it's a real competition. Him and Kenny Pickett got to duke it out, and we'll see what happens there. I'm just assuming Russell Wilson is going to be the starter. He has a good run game in Najee Harris. You got George Pickens over there as well. The defense has been solid. What are your expectations for Russell Wilson over there in Pittsburgh?
Yeah, I think you're right. Like, it's his job to lose. It might be a competition, but in the same way that Baker Mayfield, Kyle Trask was a competition last year. Like, it was set up so Baker Mayfield wins that job unless he's an absolute catastrophe in training camp. Sam Howell, Jacoby Brissett, I think the same idea. Like, one guy is going to win that unless he's a total disaster. Russell Wilson is going to be the starter, I think, barring an absolute disaster in training camp. And I like the fit. I mean, number one, it's always relevant what the contract is. So Russell Wilson connected to a $230 million extension is such a bad idea that the Denver Broncos are paying him $39 million to not be in the building this year. But the Steelers are going to consequently pay him basically nothing. He's on $1 million for the Steelers against their salary cap. So Russell Wilson for $1 million is one of the best value contracts in the entire NFL. So I think he comes in, makes that offense better versus what it was a year ago. We're going to see a different scheme, obviously, with Arthur Smith coming in there. It remains to be seen, I think, quite how that's going to mesh with Russell Wilson. On the one hand, Arthur Smith really likes working the middle of the field, and Russell Wilson doesn't like doing that. On the other hand, Arthur Smith also likes play action, deep shots down the field, and that's what Russell Wilson is best at in his entire NFL career. So I think we need to see where that balance lies, but I like the concept of what it can be. And I think in terms of value, it's as good as Pittsburgh could have done this offseason.
Obviously, the Atlanta Falcons getting their quarterback with Kirk Cousins. We wondered if they would trade up and draft someone, maybe try to go for J.J. McCarthy. And I like Kirk going to Atlanta. He was obviously one of the best free agents available, gets a lot of nice weapons there. But there's always been that question about Cousins, right? So what's it going to take to succeed in Atlanta?
Yeah, I think you're right. Like, there was one high-quality starting veteran quarterback available this offseason, and it was Kirk Cousins. And the Falcons getting him means they can keep number eight. It means they can keep number eight and the things that they would have to give up if they were going to trade from number eight to go even higher and go get a quarterback. So it just gives them an awful lot more flexibility. Now they can sit there at eight, maybe draft another receiver, maybe draft a defensive player, and keep all those picks that they would have had to package to trade further up instead. You're right. Like, Kirk Cousins, he's not Patrick Mahomes. He's not Josh Allen. He's not in that very, very top echelon of quarterbacks. So you need to try and make a better team than those other quarterbacks have around them. And that's part of what bringing in Cousins and saving that draft capital lets you do. They are working in a weak division. That'll help. Like, they're immediately the favorite for the for that division, the NFC South, just because of adding Kirk Cousins. You know, once you make the playoffs, you don't necessarily need Cousins to be better than the other guys. You just need Cousins to have a good run. And it's only a 3 or 4 game sequence that you need now. So, you know, I think the Falcons know that Cousins puts them in just a much better position than they were in. And then they're kind of going to play the same game that the Vikings were playing for the last few years and just hope they get the good end of Kirk Cousins at the most critical time.
Speaking of the Vikings, I'm intrigued with Sam Darnold and how it works out over there. I think the Vikings are in position to possibly draft a quarterback, but I also think that Sam Darnold probably has the best weapons he's had as a professional in the NFL. How do you see that playing out? Do you think the Vikings should go after a quarterback, and do you feel Darnold still has something left in the tank to kind of change the trajectory of his career?
I think they're definitely going after a quarterback. Sam Darnold is brought in to raise the floor of the quarterback room, you know, so that if worst case scenario, things go badly in the draft, they're not able to maneuver for the guy they want. They know that at the minimum they have Sam Darnold who they can get by with for as long as they need to do it. But it's not going to stop you going after that quarterback. I think he's just a stopgap to make sure the season isn't a complete and total catastrophe. But you're right, Sam Darnold has some, he's got tools to work with. He's got a good offensive coach in Kevin O'Connell there. Obviously, Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison, there's receivers to work with as well. So there's definitely a world where you get the best version of Sam Darnold within this offense for however long he's there. It's just we've kind of played that game before with Sam Darnold, and there have been flashes or there have been a few game sequences where he's looked good, and then it typically unravels again at the end of it. So I think it's a solid move just in terms of making sure you've got a body in the chair, but they're definitely going after a quarterback in the draft.
I have a big question, and you can answer it a number of ways, so you'll just have to go with maybe gut instinct. But how in general do you see or rank free agency in terms of a philosophy about team building? Because here in Seattle, we're trying to add some rationale, maybe some salve onto, you know, frustration that there aren't a lot of moves by saying, well, development of young players is just as important. So where do you fit free agency in the hierarchy and the importance of building a Super Bowl team?
I think it's important, but it's how you approach it that I think is critical. Number one, like the biggest sort of untalked about element of free agency is potentially bringing your own players back, you know, making sure that you don't have a whole bunch of guys hit free agency and leave, and you're trying to patch holes that are being created rather than just patching holes that are already there and trying to make things better. But then the second element is I think free agency should just be about let's try and cover holes on the roster so that we're not chasing needs in the draft. I think that's where teams can get into trouble is say, we don't need to approach this in free agency because we've got a first round pick and then we just draft a wide receiver with our first round pick. But now you have to draft a wide receiver with that first round pick because you put yourself in a position where you don't have really an alternative. You let everything else go by you in free agency. So I think the best use of free agency is just plugging gaps on the roster and then using the draft and development to to really have the biggest leaps forward in year-on-year production.
He is Pro Football Focus's Sam Monson, kind enough to join us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Thanks, Sam. We appreciate
it. Thanks, Sam.
Anytime, guys. Take it easy.
All right, let's get to headline rewrites.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Headline rewrites.
We must make headlines.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Bump and Stacey.
Headline number one, the Seahawks started today off by signing former Husky and Cleveland Brown center Nick Harris to a one-year deal. What's the real headline?
There's been a lot of change in Seattle, but the Hawks continued their long story tradition of signing an okay center who will be here for one season.
Hey.
Sometimes tradition matters.
It does matter.
You know what I mean?
We're losing it in college sports.
It's time-honored.
So let's go ahead and do it here. This is what you do. There's competition at that center spot. And you drafted a guy last year. You brought in Evan Brown last year as well. This is just part of the Seahawks' never-ending quest to find a franchise center. I saw people text in Max Unger was someone said a hunger for Unger. Still.
Oh, I liked that one.
Yeah, that was pretty
good. We have a hunger for Unger.
Good for you, whoever sent that. But no, you're real, man. And hopefully they found this guy and they're just bringing him in Oluwatimi and bringing in these other guys for competition. That's what I think it is. But competition is good. 1 year deal. Let's see how it works out. He might surprise and win the job, and
sure,
we feel good about it. So you're not going to draft a center and what a high pick. You're not going to acquire one during free agency. So you go ahead, put them in a room, let them box it out and see who comes out victorious.
I know that there haven't been a lot of moves people absolutely love. In addition to Nick Harris, they signed Pharaoh Brown away from the Patriots. He's just for depth. You guys had one tight end on the roster with Noah Fant. Seahawks, by the way, confirming that news while we were talking with Sam Monson. So you needed to add depth. It was going to be Noah Fant and a couple undrafted free agents or rookies, or it was going to be Noah Fant, now Pharaoh Brown, and then some kind of rookie. Mm-hmm. Adam Schefter also reporting this morning the Seahawks are bringing back veteran corner Artie Burns, also a solid depth piece. These are fine moves.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number two. Not even kidding with this one. Aaron Rodgers has been approached by independent presidential candidate Robert F. Kennedy Jr. to be his running mate for the 2024 presidential election. What's the real headline?
When Aaron Rodgers said the Jets need to eliminate distractions, he meant from his political campaigns. He meant, leave me alone. I'm focused, okay?
Oh, man, I think it's just funny. It's funny how all you gotta do is be popular in this country, and you'll get some opportunities that you're probably not even qualified for. But it is what it is. Aaron Rodgers is doing whatever he wants to, and maybe his success in football has allowed him. No, it's not even maybe. It's for sure. It's allowed him to get opportunities like this, if this is real and if he wants it to happen. He hasn't said anything. That's the funny part about it. He's just watching this all go down, probably rubbing his hands together and loving the attention. But it would be interesting to see him out there doing this thing.
I think it would also, and this is obviously an aid to Robert F. Kennedy Jr., it would bring more eyes to that. I mean, earlier in your Get Off My Lawn segment, you said, look, I am so tired of people just kind of throwing their name into political rings without experience. At mm-hmm. the same time, so much of politics now is identity, and so much of politics now is who do I like, who do I trust? And I think it is much easier to trust someone that you like, that you are a fan of. I think Kennedy knows exactly what he's doing with this.
Yeah, he does. When you think about just what he's doing, yeah, it's smart. He knows how to pull at people's emotions,
yeah,
and the trust that you describe. So, yeah, this is the way things work these days.
I love the 425's alternate headline better than my own. Quote, anything to get out of a Jets contract.
Headline rewrites.
Yeah, somebody posted the pay that the vice president gets, just the salary. I think it's like $200,000 a year.
That's wild that there are people getting paid more, just regular people getting paid more than a vice president.
Yeah.
Actually, well, rightfully getting, so, I guess. You're a public servant.
Well, and I think Aaron Rodgers' salary with the Jets is like probably 40-something million. Like, that's a significant pay cut, but
yeah,
I guess
if
you're a public servant, you know.
You get free food, free housing, free security.
Yeah, yeah.
Transportation.
Security, like, all over.
It's like being the halftime performer of the Super Bowl. Your future earnings are going to go way up once you're done with the job.
Uh-huh.
Headline number three, the Kraken blew a late 4-2 lead, losing to the Golden Knights 5-4 in overtime. What's the real headline?
Was last night the beginning of the end for this year's Kraken team?
Yeah, it's looking like it. It's looking like it. Here's the thing. They've given us some good moments this year. Obviously disappointing when you're trying to build off of last year. Curtis mentioned this earlier, that after this year, it's probably time to get some real expectations. I went into this year and saying, all right, maybe make the playoffs and you'll be fine. Just keep drafting, keep developing. But at some point, changes will have to be made if they don't pull this thing off. I don't know how likely it is, but it's not looking too good.
Curtis, what was that stat from that you posted?
Yeah, it was no team in the salary cap era, which dates back to 05-06, has made up this big of a points deficit with this little time remaining. So they're 9 out with 18 games to go.
Until
now.
Now.
That's
until
right.
Now.
Speaking
Quest
into
for the
existence.
Cup, part 3 starts today, and it's happening, okay, guys? We're doing it this year.
We're doing it.
We
Come
are
on.
Getting a Stanley Cup here in Seattle. Do I sound like I believe
it? Are we talking
it?
About Lord Stanley's
Stanley
Cup?
Or another Stanley Cup?
Or the Stanley Cup that's all the hype beasts are
sweeping the nation.
Yeah, exactly. I already have 3 of them, you know.
I had one and didn't even realize it.
What do you mean you had one and didn't realize it? How are you using it every day?
Because it's like a little coffee cup. It's not like a Stanley.
You didn't have like this 64-ounce walking around looking like you're carrying a bar stool Stanley Cup.
I didn't.
Okay.
Hate all you want on the giant Stanley Cups.
I absolutely will not.
Those things keep your drink cold for days.
Stanley Cups are kind of like Uggs. Like anything that's a trend where people start to make fun of it, but then you realize, like, well, this is why it's trending.
Yeah.
Like, Uggs are insanely comfortable, and we're, like, warm in the wintertime and, like, high quality. I never had real Uggs. I only had Kirkland brand ones, but I would imagine the real ones were high quality.
That's how I feel about Crocs. I was knocking Crocs.
Okay, I'm
and
not
then
going
I got
there.
Crocs.
No, now you're getting reckless.
Ooh, them things are comfy.
My sister's boyfriend is obsessed with Crocs, and he has Croc cowboy boots.
Oh boy.
I beg pardon?
Yes. Oh I am telling you. And the Crocs, I didn't know this. They have like little like keychains almost, like little things that you can punch into the holes.
They're called gibbets.
Oh my God.
Willa Rogers. Right. Willa Rogers has a bunch of those.
Matthew,
she loves her Crocs.
Do you have Crocs?
No.
Dang What's the,
and
Matt,
frankly, the question insults me.
First of all,
they're
Matt,
comfy.
Are you willing to tell us something that you would normally be embarrassed about admitting that you own?
Boy, I own so
I said
many
that
embarrassing
I own 3 Stanley Cups.
What's the nerdiest thing you
but
own?
But Matt's not embarrassed about any of his nerdy things, nor should you be.
No, I'm really not. I mean, I own all of Doctor Who on Blu-ray, and I think a lot of people would be ashamed to admit that, but it's a point of pride for me,
It's really
frankly.
More surprising that it's on Blu-ray.
Oh, let
Matt
me tell you.
Matt loves physical media.
Yeah.
1960s British television looks so good in high definition.
Oh, my God. All right. You're listening to Bump and Stacey on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app. Taking a look around the NFL next. Guess who is in attendance at Bo Nix's Pro Day? Don't go anywhere.
Bump and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacey Ross.
Trevor May joining us in studio in 30 minutes. Right now we're sticking with the NFL, taking a look at some other teams. Starting with Seattle, but really we're talking about what's happening in Eugene. Seahawks offensive coordinator Ryan Grubb was in attendance yesterday for Bo Nix's Pro Day. Get this though, Bump. Just one NFL head coach was present, that being Chicago's Matt Eberflus.
They already know. They already know. This is what's going to happen. They're going to fly him out to their facility. They're going to talk to him, get him on the whiteboard and have those conversations. He did throw at the combine. They've seen that already. It's the recruiting process or the evaluation process for the NFL is going to change drastically over the next few years. It's already changed a lot. Guys are realizing that you don't have to be there or see them in person to understand who they are, but you're going to get that opportunity anyway if you're really interested in drafting a quarterback. He will be at the facility. So it's not a surprise to me. I thought maybe there'd be 2 or 3 coaches out there, but it makes sense.
All right, the Chargers are moving on from a familiar name. They're releasing longtime veteran wide receiver Mike Williams. Williams was due to count $32.46 million against the cap in 2024. Holy cow, the final year of a 3-year, $60 million contract that he signed back in 2020. By releasing him, the club saves $20 million on the salary cap. They also restructured Khalil Mack's deal. They were over the cap, need to get under it in about 30 minutes, 1 p.m. deadline today to be cap compliant, so not surprising. Ian Rappaport, who initially had this report, added that the Chargers would like to bring him back, but Williams is expected to test the market.
And he should. He's only been with that team since 2017. Last year, only played in three games, 26 targets, 19 receptions, and 249. But he's had some good years. 2021 went over 1,000. 19 went over 1,000. You start reaching 28, 29, 30. You slow down a little bit. But I think with all the moves that the Chargers are making, this is necessary because they want to free up some space. You have a new head coach over there. You have a franchise quarterback. It's all about building up that defense. Khalil Mack restructures his contract. This is all business. It's nothing personal, and I would assume he's back in L.A.
How do we feel about a reunion for two former Seahawks in Pittsburgh? The Steelers have already added Russell Wilson in free agency. Andrew Filipponi, who works for 93.7 The Fan out in Pittsburgh, says that based on things he's heard, he thinks it's very possible the Steelers sign Jamal Adams.
Already knew. Yeah, mate. Jamal Adams is going to play on a team next year.
But I've been wondering. We haven't really heard wind of anything when it comes to Adams or Diggs. And I've been most curious about Adams, given the $20 million in dead cap Seattle's going to be carrying for him, where he's going to go play, what he's going to look like, what that contract is going to look like that he eventually signs. I've been so curious about it.
Beauty is in the eye of the beholder. Over here in Seattle, people are looking at Jamal, and they're glad that he's gone. But across the league, I think people are thinking, give him a full offseason to recover, and let's just see what happens. And now they're in a great position because he can't demand the money that he could have a couple years ago or did a few years ago. It's a different situation. I think if there's anybody who can get the most out of him, it is Tomlin over there in Pittsburgh.
Well, Jason Kelce has some regrets. Not really, but on the New Heights podcast, he joked that he regrets retiring from the Eagles once they got Saquon Barkley this offseason. If only I would have waited another year, I could have had Saquon. Who are you most curious to see? Saquon with the Eagles, which can be a really dynamic run team, or Derrick Henry with the Baltimores, who can do the same?
Oh, it's Derrick Henry all day.
Yeah.
You know this is the Baltimore Ravens program.
That's exactly right.
Exactly what it is. And we look forward to seeing them play. It just made too much sense when we heard it was them, Houston. I think even maybe the Cowboys were in the mix. You and I said it has to be Baltimore. You get him in the backfield with Lamar Jackson and the things that you could do. They do need to pick up another receiver, though. Odell Beckham, I believe, is a free agent. Still got Zay Flowers over there. The tight end situation is looking good. If they pick up one more receiver, a number two receiver, they could see themselves in the AFC Championship game.
Well, there is a former Raven who remains a free agent. We haven't talked about him much because we were so focused on maybe Geno Stone, Patrick Queen. But Jadeveon Clowney, unsigned. The Panthers are hosting him for a visit this week.
Panthers are making moves, too. I mean, everyone's making moves right now. But I like what the Panthers are doing. Clowney coming off his best season as a pro in what, year 9, 10 or something like that. I mean, he's balling at the right time. With all the moves being made and guys leaving the Baltimore Ravens, my question is, how good is that defense is going to look? Is it going to be flipped next year where the offense has to kind of lead the charge and the defense catches up? But good for Clowney. He had himself a good year, was a force on that defense. You go over to the Carolina Panthers, you have some familiarity with Canales over there. He was in Seattle when Clowney was there, mm-hmm. and hopefully he can help.
All right, looking around the league at a few other guys who are signing or staying with their teams. You got Kendrick Bourne, who has a new 3-year contract with the New England Patriots. The Patriots are a really interesting team. So they hang on to wide receiver Kendrick Bourne. They've got some stuff to work with in the draft. Do you go quarterback if you're them at number 3 and start really reeling in some more weapons for them? I mean, I don't know that signing Kendrick Bourne to a new contract is any, you know, indication of going quarterback, but it does keep a weapon there.
No, I think you do go quarterback unless you try to do something to get Justin Fields, which I also think is a possibility at New England. But you go quarterback. You got Mayo, first-time head coach over there. You got Brissett, who is one of the better backup quarterbacks in the league. Yeah, you go quarterback, you start all over. This is your official reset button. We felt like Mac Jones was kind of just thrown into that situation because mm-hmm. of circumstances, but this is different. You can control your destiny. I say you go after a quarterback, or you look at Justin Fields, built that offense.
Let's talk about the best free agents still available in the league. Congratulations if you're looking for a left tackle. Tyron Smith is still out there. Wide receiver Calvin Ridley is joined by Mike Williams now, as we just mentioned, with some great options there. You got cornerbacks Kendall Fuller, Hollywood Brown's available, another corner Stephon Gilmore, Chase Young at edge is still available. He's visiting with a couple different teams, including the Titans. I got to say, you guys, our conversation with Sam Monson was kind of eye-opening here as well. sometimes it's just not your year in free agency. And Bump, I'm seeing so many people that are really frustrated and angry with a lack of spending in free agency so far for the Seahawks. But these are the top players available. Defensive lineman Eric Armstead, who's just now being released by the 49ers, hadn't been official. Chase Young, you know, if you need an edge rusher. Otherwise, corners, wide receivers, a left tackle. Is that really your market?
No, it's not. Receivers, you're good. Offensive line, you're good. You just picked up a center. You drafted well over there. Corners, you're really good to go. You got Woolen and Witherspoon locking down a couple sides with some backups there. No, it's, they're fine in those positions. Their main thing, we've been saying it all day, you got to go linebacker, maybe a safety, but even if they don't make a big splash with the safeties, you're good. You can address that in the draft. You got some guys with experience already.
All right, well, let's talk about the most improved teams in free agency. Mike Clay of ESPN ranks them at number 4. He's got the Atlanta Falcons. They made the biggest move, certainly, considering that Chris Jones stayed with Kansas City and didn't leave for a new team. The next big free agent became Kirk Cousins. He goes to Atlanta, bam, done. You add wide receiver Darnell Mooney, add a tight end, give him some more weapons. So Atlanta is now the team to watch in the NFC South. The Washington Commanders make the list at number 3. Linebacker Frankie Louvu, their top addition. That you really liked what they've done in free agency with a couple more of those guys, though.
Yeah, I also like what the Houston Texans have done, man. They are attractive right now. But, yeah. Commanders are they're making their moves, and good for them. They needed a change over there. It started with the hiring of who they hired at a as their new head coach over there.
Dan Quinn,
tripping. Yep. Starts with Dan Quinn. You go and get a quarterback just in case. But all of the free agent moves are awesome, and they have a lot of cap space as well. Mm-hmm. What a high draft pick. This is their opportunity right here. And they play in a division where you need to ball. The Dallas Cowboys are going to play great during the regular season. We know that. The Philadelphia Eagles have gotten better. Saquon Barkley is over there. The New York Giants and the Commanders are going to be fighting for that third spot. If you stay healthy, get lucky. Who knows what could happen?
So you saw the future. His team at number 2 is Jacksonville. He likes safety Darnell Savage and center Mitch Morse being their key additions there. Morse was a cap casualty earlier with the Bills. He was their starting center and a huge part of an improved season. Fewest career sacks for Josh Allen this year back in Buffalo. So great news for Trevor Lawrence there in Jacksonville. His number 1 team is the Houston Texans. They added Danielle Hunter at edge rusher. He was one of the top free agents. Added Joe Mixon, traded for him, I believe. You've got Danico Autry, Jeff Okuda at corner, who is a really high prospect that you're just kind of waiting to tap into. And importantly, re-signed really, really important guys, including tight end Dalton Schultz.
Got Schultz. Tank Dell's going to be healthy next year. You mentioned Hunter, Jimmy Ward at the safety spot. This team is looking good. And most importantly, C.J. Stroud showed that he can play in this league will be here for a while.
All right, well, we've had a couple key questions about the Seahawks that we've spent a lot of our day talking about. We also have some about the Mariners. We're going to talk about those next. And Trevor May joining us in studio, top of the hour. Don't go anywhere.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost.
I know I said that I was going to go to the Mariners, and I am, and we're going to have Trevor May in studio, but just very, very quickly while I get this service sound here, I wanted to bring up something from the Mac and Jack's text line that we briefly talked about off air from the 206. Watch Jamal Adams have a Pro Bowl season. Seattle curse. Now, I have convinced myself at times, particularly with the Mariners, that this team is cursed. I have just let myself believe that Seattle is like destined to have horrible sports luck at times, like, you know, like Cleveland, like some of these, like Detroit, like some of these other cities. However, it is also exceptionally difficult to find consistent success in the NFL. And while I think that the Seahawks could do better, that they could have hit on personnel, that they could have had better draft classes, that they could have made better decisions and better coaching decisions and all of that, there's been like 2 dynasties, all right, since 2000. The Patriots and lately the Chiefs. Everyone else is like, hey, you get one shot. That's your Super Bowl. Congrats, Eagles. You got your Super Bowl in Super Bowl 52. Hey, that's it. That's it, Denver. You got it in 2015. I think before that, you haven't had it since the 90s. San Francisco, dominant team, looking for their first Super Bowl win since the 90s as well. Seattle looking to get back. I know. Seattle looking to get back to an NFC championship game, which they haven't done since their last visit in 2015 calendar year. It just happens, man.
This earth has been here for what, billions of years?
Who can say?
All right. I know. Okay. Billions of years.
Trillions of years.
Your team doesn't win in 10 years. That's nothing, okay? For us, it's a lot because we're here and we're just so...
We get angry. We get fired up. We get invested every year.
We're minimal to this universe. But no, I don't believe in curses. I believe in horrible management. I believe in guys just aren't performing. And I believe in cities and teams not doing enough to support their team as well. So, no, I don't think it's a curse.
Yeah,
I don't believe that.
Exactly. Like, are the Mariners cursed, or have they been hesitant to be as aggressive as other teams, right? Have they not? There's all kinds of things that kind of go in your way. And again, sometimes I convince myself of a sports curse, but I don't know, man. I think that a Super Bowl win since 2010 puts you in a group of however many
teams.
There's
one team that might be cursed.
Who?
Cleveland Browns.
Sure. Or, hear me out, Minnesota Vikings. Never won a Super Bowl.
Or them. They've been there, though, right? They've been there.
Yeah, but they never won before.
Yeah.
Bills.
Browns haven't even been there, though.
Never won a Super Bowl.
Browns haven't even been.
Haven't been. Nor have the Lions. Mm. So it's like, if you want to say one team is great, yeah, I'll co-sign that. But, yeah, I don't know about that. all right, you guys. We are going to switch gears talking about the Mariners. Now, Trevor May is going to join us in studio at 1. If you have more Mariners questions, we're going to throw all of our Mariners questions at him, some around the MLB questions. But if you guys have more, you can send those into the Mac and Jack's text line, 866-979-3776. First, let's talk about a couple things we learned about the Mariners from Scott Service's interview with Wyman and Bob yesterday. First, an improved plan when it comes to health in 2024. The Mariners have a high-performance group that meets every single day, and they've discussed planning out the week and which days certain guys should probably be off. Scott Service says that this year especially, the depth of the team allows them to rest more guys. Now, Bump, if you have a year in which you're looking at some of your most important additions, Polanco, Garver, Haniger, having an injury history, nothing is more important than finding rest days, and they can do that with this roster. So, obviously, that's hugely important.
Oh, my bad.
Them.
I thought you had some sound or
no,
something.
No, I know.
Like,
well, okay. I was still pulling it up. I was still pulling up.
Yeah, it is important. Because it seems like everybody that they brought over has some type of history, right? But if you play sports long enough, you play in the NFL, MLB, NHL, whatever, long enough, you're going to have some type of injury history. But yes, depth is important. In depth to the point where if you need to use it, you use it. Not, okay, today we're going here and today we're going there. No, you want consistency as much as you can with your position players and have those guys for depth in case something does come up. So, no, I'm feeling that.
Now, we've always wanted this team to be really aggressive in their pursuit of greatness, so you guys are probably going to like what Service says here.
We need to get better. That's the bottom line, and there's a lot of different ways to go about that. The thing that excites me most is everybody is going down the same road. We don't have people veering off. Oh, I'm just going to focus on being an all-star this year. I'm just going to focus on a contract for next year. We don't have any of that going on. Now, that's a challenge as the season goes on. You got to keep everybody's like eyes on the prize, so to speak, and the prize is to win the AL West.
The prize is to win the AL West. Now, we all remember writing on the whiteboard, win it all. That obviously did not happen. They did not make it to the playoffs, but you should be thinking about winning the AL West. This was a three-horse race late into the season. You needed a godlike performance from Julio in August to get you out of a hole that you dug yourself into, but a quicker start this year could change a lot of that, Bump.
Well, that's a... advantage to have. You know that if you can compete in this division, you should be one of the better teams in all of baseball. So you're sizing guys up. And I think that's the one thing we want to see. We want to see a lot of things. We want to see guys get healthy. We want to see that rotation be on point. We want to see these additions be the people we think that they can be. But you want to see this team start off a bit faster than they did last year. You win one or two games last year earlier in the season. Who knows? Because a lot of things happen. You might be in the playoffs. But it's keeping up. I don't expect them to come out and lead the charge when it comes to the AL West. Would be nice, but I don't expect them to do that. But I want them to keep up with the comp. Mm-hmm. Because you do have some new pieces here. You are trying to see what this bullpen looks like. A couple of pieces in the outfit, a new third baseman. You know, there's some cohesion that needs to happen, even though baseball is the most individual team sport I can think of other than track. But just start off fast. And start off fast doesn't mean shutouts and 10 runs here or there. It's just, man, producing and getting better at the situations that you were horrible at last year.
Get a win. A win in April matters just as much as a win in September. It's something that everyone has said when they joined this program, talking about those fast starts, but it really does matter. And importantly, how about a fast start, a faster start for some of your key players? One of the big storylines last year, it feels like a million years ago, was why is Jared Kelnick the only guy performing right now? now. I mean, everyone was off to a slow start. The offense as a whole was so inconsistent. So great news about Julio Rodriguez from Scott Servais.
I think visiting with him this offseason in his backyard, we were down in Tampa and went to his workouts and saw him hit and all this other stuff. It was very clear this guy is way more focused than he was a year ago, having gone through the season he had. And he admitted, you know, I had a good five-week run. In 5 weeks, he did all that damage. And he kind of struggled the rest of the year. He doesn't want that to happen again. And how do you become more consistent? You got to have a better approach. You got to stay really focused throughout the year, understand there's going to be some ups and downs. You don't have to change your swing every other day and do some of the things that players want to just run to right away.
He said you got to have a better focus, and Julio is more focused than last year.
Sounds like it. You hear Servais talk about him. Shannon Dreyer said the same thing. And when you're entering your third year, you know some things. You have changed your approach. You're adjusting as you come along. I feel like your first year, you're kind of just, oh my gosh, so happy to be here. Let's just go and have fun. Second year, there are a bit more of expectations, but he's a grown man now. You know, he's the leader of this ball club. So I like that Servais is communicating with him and is recognizing some of the changes in him, because that's all we want. We want growth from everybody, and especially from athletes. They want that for themselves.
Yeah.
So I'll just go out there, be you, but build off of what you did last year.
Remember Julio saying it, no one wants to be better more than me. I know that you're yelling at your TV when I miss on a breaking ball and when I take a dumb swing and when I chase, but no one wants that more than me. Can't wait to see what he can do this year, especially early. Trevor May joins us in studio next. Don't go anywhere.